Hello everyone, welcome to Mendenorn's Mini Talk on Ald Noah Zero. I'm Jero, joined by Faux Shizzle.
Hey!
And Skyline's here.
Hello everybody!
We are talking about episode 10 of Ald Noah Zero on this podcast, Before the War, and quite a few things go down. Definitely the cliffhanger from the last episode we were very much looking forward to, with Rayet choking out a Salem there, and lots of thoughts about whether Salem was dead or not. And for some CPR from Inaho, she is revived, and then we have a bit of a showdown here with Rayet as she's sort of talking about not really knowing her place and hating all Martians. Martians are the enemy. How did you guys like how that scene played out?
I thought it was interesting. It shows you that Inaho kind of, I wouldn't say fully trust Rayet. I mean, she did try to, you know, kill the princess, but yeah, I thought, you know, it's interesting seeing him stop her from killing herself, because she was about to do that at the end. And yeah, he just sees her as an ally right now. It's sort of the enemy of my enemy type scenario with her, I think they have going on. So It's like, you know, well, I don't think you would trust her to keep his back, you know, watch his back, whatever, but, you know, they do have a common enemy, so it's like, you can kind of stick around with us.
Yeah, it's kind of different, the dynamic between Inaho and Rayet, as there was Inaho in Slain in episode 7, where he had this guy that he didn't really know where he stood, and that's why he went against Slain at the end of episode 7. Whereas here, I think he knows enough about Rayet that he doesn't trust her, but as you said, enemy of my enemy is my friend, and that's why he's probably just thinking, you know, he talked about exploit with Slain, probably would be in some sense the same way with Rayet.
Yeah, because I have a friend who, she is kind of confused on why he treats a Rayet this way, but he wouldn't treat Slain the same way. And my whole defense on that is, he hasn't really met Slain face to face, you know, they haven't really chance to talk to each other. Even if they're not going to agree on everything, they still haven't had that, you know, moment where they have to put their differences aside and work together. So it's like, I see him trusting, yeah, you said, not really trust, but, you know, he wants to keep Rayet around.
Yeah, I think that, you know, he'll trust Rayet more because he's seen her in a towel. But that, all that joking aside, you know, Inaho has less trust for Slain because he knows more than anything else that he's more Martian than Earthling, and probably doesn't even know the fact that he's more Earthling than anything else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's going to confront what is directly in front of him. And that is someone who has more hatred for Martians than she does for anything else. And that can be used. Enemy of my enemy is a good way to put it, but the best way to put it is that she's got to trust them to survive, and she probably wants to survive more than anything else.
Yeah, I agree with that. Moving on from there, a couple big scenes in this episode. We see Sawsbom talking with Slain, and he talks about his past and some of the reasons why he's going to war. We talked about, I believe, the whole resources thing in the last episode, that they're basically fighting for food and plant life and all that stuff. But we also see Deucalion in the past, and it was piloted by his wife, Orlane. And we see them in a mission together, and then there was some castle drops going on at the time that Vers were bringing down, and that's what caused Orlane, as far as we know, to die. And that's why, you know, as much as any reason, Sawsbom is rebelling against Vers.
Right, because in the beginning they're told that Earth has, you know, they have this, all these weapons and stuff, because they're even under destroying the place. They're like, this is easy. We should have took this place over, you know, years ago. But I guess it's all been fed from the Emperor that Earth is evil, and, you know, they're the ones hoarding all the resources, and they don't want it, you know, to share or help us. So, you know, the Martians have that weird mindset that the Earth is evil and all this. And yeah, like they said, the technology wasn't as powerful as they thought. So it's like, again, they're like crushing ants, basically. But yeah, they get destroyed because of the castle drop thing. So yeah,
and a fight over resources actually has a lot of historical precedent, because, you know, you can wrap up a war in jingoism, you can wrap it up in nationalism and different stuff like that. But take a look at the source of all wars; it all comes down to food, land, and trade.
Right, pretty much. Yeah, it does.
You know, Hitler wanted living space. You know, the Japanese They hit China, Korea, Taiwan because they wanted to grow the population and they didn't have enough land to grow food. American westward expansion, same story. It's all, you know, this is not a new story, unfortunately.
Right, yeah. You break it down, it's, yeah, some parts aren't really. It's just basic.
War never changes.
Well, I think...
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I think it's very telling for Urobuchi to be able to bring that sort of element into it, to finally just to break it down, to take it away from, you know, we're superior, we're gonna kick your butt no matter what, to actually just take it back to history repeats itself. What is past is prologue. And it's a very interesting thing because we've still got unsettled wars in this country. We've still got water shortages and food shortages and basic resource shortages, and people are angry. So it's an old story, it's a new story, it's a current story.
Mm-hmm.
They need hyperos.
All right, and next up, we have the crew. They're arriving at the United Earth headquarters, and they're thinking that this is the moment where the princess can speak and let everybody know she's alive, and she does that, but the thing is, Zazbomb lets Slane know that, you know, nobody's going to see this. They ran some sort of interference thing or something, so yeah. Falling on deaf ears, pretty much.
Yeah, it seems weird. Zazbomb is like, quick to reveal all this stuff. He's like, yeah, I tried to kill her. Yeah, I'm blocking the signal. Yeah, he's really testing Slane's patience, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like Slane's like two steps away from this, killing this guy because he's just like, you've told me everything. Everything I know now. So it's like, mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, she's trying to do the signal and get her granddad and gets blocked. And yeah, you know, I don't think they're 100% safe. As I think one of the characters, they film it. They're all, we're good now. You know, we reached the base. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to be fine. Like, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm still on the fence about why Zazbomb let Slane go. What does he hope to gain from letting him go? Does he feel him that insignificant a threat?
Mm-hmm. I think that's what it is. It's so confusing with, he keeps talking about the debt to Dr. Troyard,
mm-hmm.
but is there something in him that's kind of holding him back from thinking that way about Slane, to not, you know, thinking, oh, he might be a traitor to us, and surely he will. I don't know what's really stopping Zazbomb there.
I still think it's like a big test.
I can't remember if
where he's going with it.
Well, I can't remember if it was a comment or if it was on one of the Metaverse podcasts with EJ Rowe, but I think I said something along the lines that Slane's father might be holding the keys to be able to diverting the flow of Aldnoa away from the Emperor, away from the royal family, and into someone else.
Yeah.
That's kind of been in the background since mm-hmm. the very beginning.
Yeah, that was you on episode 8 when we spoke about that.
Yeah, I can see that being a thing, because it's like there has to be other ways to get the Aldnoa power besides mm-hmm. just being blessed with, you know, from the royal family. There has to be other ways to get it. I mean, you know, it has to be, if anything, I mean, like, you know, you used Attack on Titan in one of the comments that, you know, it's kind of similar to that, you know. Some people in that world can turn into titans, some people can't. So it's like, mm-hmm. there has to be other ways to get that power.
And then there you think about the injection that mm-hmm. Aaron's father gave him.
Right. It could be easily done that with you know, Slane's dad. I mean, who mm-hmm. knows?
Yeah. And one thing that we see in this episode, we see Pharsis, which is apparently, we've never seen it before, but we know it as Count Cruteo's mech, and he sees that something about the Aldnoa power is off, which leads Slane to believe that Count Cruteo is dead, which is very interesting considering getting back to episode 8 that I didn't think he died, and what does this really mean?
Yeah, I think, like I said last week, when they knocked the princess out and the ship fell, it gave you a hint of that's one way to take out the Aldnoa power if something happens to, you know, someone who has that power. But mm-hmm. yeah, it definitely shows you that he's probably dead, because it's been, what, maybe a couple of days since, you know, Slane was taken from him. I don't know how long it's been, really, but it's like, if he's passed out, it's been a long time.
Yeah, and then the idea is, I guess, that the blade that we saw, the beam in that episode, maybe that's what got him, but I said it before, I'll say it again, nobody don't believe he's dead.
Believe he's dead. A wrinkle that could add it into it, I'm going to go back to my theory, that Slane's father is doing a lot of different stuff in the background to, you know, again, divert the flow of Aldnoa. What if Cortejo's case is a test subject? because Emperor Varys controls where that goes. Mm-hmm. What happens if he was able to subvert Varys' control to put the Aldnoa power onto Cortejo and just remove it?
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably see next week because Selene has to do the choice to stay or go to Earth, and he's been given the machine. So if he's able to activate it, then you probably will obviously get confirmation that he's got the Aldnoa somehow.
And is there anything else you guys want to bring up from this episode? I think I about covered it. There's some stuff when they arrived on Earth, people talking more about Inaho preferring the KG-6.
He likes that one. Nothing else really.
Good reason, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he gives good reason. He says, you know, some of the extra armament just, you know, makes it slower, and reaction speed for him in some of those fights were fairly critical. Mm-hmm. Especially when he took out, you know, dual sword wielding guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't able to react really, really fast to that, he would have been part of that steam explosion as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So, all in all, this episode definitely a bit of a step down from episode 9 in terms of the intrigue and the excitement and the cliffhanging elements and stuff, but it was interesting to see a little bit more into why Sazbomb is doing what he's wanting to do right now, and seeing that his past story was pretty good. And then there was one other thing that always kind of bothers me is when they shot Slane's handcuffs off. Like, that always...
Like... Yeah, it was. I'm like, the bullet had to go through something. That's like, the handcuffs.
You know, at what point does it, like... Does everything have to be cool or badass? Just, like, just take a key.
Yeah.
Ding, Slane is now dead.
Yeah, I was like, did Slane just get shot in the crotch? Because I'm pretty sure he just did. Like, where'd the bullet go?
Yeah. Like, what if it ricocheted off the chains and then, like, hit him in the stomach or something?
Killed Sazbomb? Yes! Oops! And the castle just falls.
Sazbomb had that, like, that special, like, you know, handcuff shooting gun that had, like, bullets that were made of, like, you know, something slightly tougher than a BB gun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was weird.
Keep this sidearm packed just to be cool.
What if it was like a comedy bit and the bullet just went everywhere, just ridiculous, where it could say, bing, 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 bing.
Yeah, for like, yeah, and pull the hole through one of the windows and everyone gets stuck out in space. Whoops, that wasn't supposed to happen. The only thing I would add is the magical towels in this episode. Ray's towel didn't fall off. I'm like,
that was...
Yeah. Like, she's getting tossed around. Obviously, the towel would have fell off.
You know, I've been so trained...
Well, they're...
I'm sorry, Sky, but...
They're protected... They're protected by the Blu-ray seal, you know?
Yeah. I was going to say that I've been trained so much by dumb anime scenes like mm-hmm. that where towels fall off. That was like, I was kind of waiting for it, but then they didn't do it, and I was like, oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, I guess the Elmo is probably too classy for that.
Yeah. And, you know, the internet has already done their part to... show the uncensored.
Yeah, the choking scene, yeah. I've seen several fan arts.
Yeah.
Take that to a little extreme, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's how people are.
Yeah. Some are kind of awkward in a way.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, thank you for listening to our mini talk for episode 10 for Fosh, for Skyline. I'm J-Ro. We will see you next week.